Good afternoon. This is Tamara reading the Gilman Star for the week of January 13th. Happy New Year. We'll start as usual with the As We See It column. We can't think of a better way to celebrate the end of this COVID-19 pandemic than to have an old boys and girls reunion in August, and the organizing committee is hoping that's the way it will work out. The dates are August 12th through 15th, but, of course, it's hard, near impossible, to book any entertainment acts or vendors. And then there are folks who have to make motel reservations. We support the committee's optimism and say we can't think of a better way to end it than to sit in the beer tent with classmates from the class of 65. And we hope that's the way it works out. Seems like we're meeting more people who tell us they have had the COVID, and there doesn't seem to be any logic to it. One of our vendors who lives out of state told us that both the children in his family had it, but neither he or his wife did. So much for predictability. Just about everything has been canceled, and we sympathize with those who are missing some important steps in their life, like the high school seniors who will miss literally everything that students look forward to, such as a prom, senior class trip, chess play, etc. We were not around for World War II, nor the Depression. We would like to hear some stories from those eras and what it was like. Thoughts on COVID-19, since that seems to be all we talk about. There used to be 5 organizations delivering meals to shut-ins. 2 have dropped out, leaving the staff at Gilman Healthcare to take time out from work to deliver. How has the pandemic affected your life? What are your fears about this thing? Every now and then we think about the Black Plague or the Spanish Flu, and how they ravaged the world, and what it must have been like. UNICEF is asking billionaires to contribute to the causes of world hunger and for vaccines. What do you miss the most? Going to church? Going out to eat? Just meeting with friends? We are thankful it's a mild winter. We feel for the kids in school who are not getting the education or socialization they need. How many small businesses won't make it through this? And why is it okay to go to a crowded megastore and not a small business? IW Remote Learning Plan approved. Community team meeting will be remote. The Iroquois West School District application for an e-learning plan has been approved by the Regional Office of Education. IW Superintendent Angelo Lekas stresses that this plan is for use in emergency situations such as a snow day, and that the application for the plan had been submitted prior to the COVID pandemic. It is not a remote learning plan, Lekas said. At some grade levels, there will be packages taken home. There is more information available on the school district's web page under parents' information. In regard to the COVID situation, Lekas says the district has no active cases, 5 students on quarantine, 3 staff with positive readings, and 1 staff on quarantine. The next regular meeting of the IW School Board will be Tuesday, December 19th. That should be a correction to Thursday, January 14th, and it will be remote. You may live stream or call in for audio. This will be our first attempt at this format. Let's give it a try, and we can correct for improvement as we move forward. Topics will include policy, community update, COVID-19 vaccine and CUSD-10 update, building and grounds, continued community input, and open discussion. The Iroquois County COVID-19 update dated January 12th from the Public Health Department. Lab confirmed cases 2,167. Test results 32,217, negative 29,688, positive 2,167, deaths 53. Of the confirmed cases, 2,373 have recovered and been released from isolation. 6 are hospitalized, 97 remain isolated. By zip code, Gilman, January 5th, 257. As of January 12th, 276. Clifton, 245. up to 247. Ashcombe, 135 up to 142. Danforth was 78 up to 80. Onargo, 195, January 12th to 10. Watseka, 473, January 12th, 515. Crescent City, 60 to 61. Cisna Park, 166 to 172. Thawville, 32 to 34. Piper City, 110 to 111. Gilman looking for code enforcer. The Gilman City Council held its first regular meeting of the year Monday night, and it was a quick one. Gilman Mayor Rick Thiesfeld said the town needs a code enforcer and talked of advertising for such an official. Code enforcers are authorized to cite residents or businesses on matters of trash or debris left on property, or junked or unlicensed vehicles, cars, or vehicles left unattended, unmowed properties, and properties that are falling into disrepair to the point of becoming a health hazard are also a matter for a code enforcer. It is not a full-time position, and the last person to fill the slot was retired and performed the duties of a code enforcer on a part-time basis. In some communities, the code enforcement position is filled by police officers. On the matter of police officers, neither Gilman nor Onarga have a full-time officer, and the two communities have been talking with the Iroquois County Sheriff's Office about splitting the cost for deputies, who would split time between the two towns. Talks have stalled recently, and Thiesfeld said Monday he was planning to meet with County Board Chairman John Schur on the issue. In other action Monday night, the Gilman Council agreed to notify Danforth residents that dumping brush at the Gilman sewer plant would no longer be allowed. Thiesfeld said the amount of brush at the sewer plant has increased to a point where it is a fire hazard, citing a recent brush fire that jumped a drainage ditch. The village of Danforth had been paying Gilman $1,000 per year for Danforth residents to dump brush at the plant, and Thiesfeld said he had contacted Danforth President Larry Decker to the effect that the agreement was no longer workable. They approved a zoning variance for Mark and Kelly Whitlock to build a fence less than 6 feet from the property line. There was no objection from neighbors. They approved a slot machine license for Gilman Gaming, LLC, which is located at the Antiques and More Antique Shop at the corner of US 24 and Main Street. The council is also asking residents who have been hauling junk to the street to come to City Hall and get stickers for the items, which the city will then collect. County Clerk Guidelines for Registering Voting. If you are not registered to vote and wish to be, please call the County Clerk's office at 815-432-6960. A list of registrars and locations to register voters is available at the Clerk's office. You may also register at the County Clerk's office, Administrative Center, 1001 East Grant Street, Watseka, Illinois, from 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday. Additionally, you may register to vote online. Our website address is www.co.iroquois.il.us/resources/elections. Click on the paperless online voter registration link and follow the instructions. Eligible voters must hold a valid Illinois driver's license or an Illinois state-issued identification card. In order to be eligible to vote at the polls for the April 6, 2021 consolidated election, the last day to register in the county clerk's office or with deputy registrars is Tuesday, March 9, 2021. The last day to register online is March 21, 2021. Electors may now apply to vote by mail either in the county clerk's office or by phone at 815-432-6960. The last day to vote early in the county clerk's office before the April 6, 2021 consolidated election is Monday, April 5th. Handicapped and elderly may also vote at their polling place, not accessible to them, by requesting a special application from the county clerk's office. Election judges will assist voters who have properly applied for curbside voting. Election judges are available to provide assistance when needed, if a friend or relative cannot assist the voter at the polls. For any information concerning registration or voting for the handicapped, please call the County Clerk's Office at 815-432-6960. And from Alan Weber, what a coup looks like. I watched the Trump rally and subsequent protest last week. I was proud of the people who traveled to D.C. to support our president, along with expressing their displeasure with the election debacle. I wish I had been there. Even more impressive was when they funneled to the Capitol for a peaceful protest concerning the criminal acts going on inside by our new Politburo. I posted to Facebook pictures of the masses of people, a red, white, and blue sea of humanity, there for the president. After 4 years of anarchy, capped off with horse feathers, that was the year 2020, my patriotic juices were flowing again. Then, like everything else irrational the last 4 years, something changed. I watched in dismay as people surrounded and breached the Capitol. It seemed surreal, as if a command on a battlefield had been ordered. People were fighting with guards, breaking windows, and attacking House chambers. I suspected the people doing the damage were not there to support Trump, but were the same degenerates causing anarchy across our nation's cities all year. You remember them, the riots and anarchy the government and media thought were justified, as opposed to this new insurrection supposedly mounted by Trump supporters. We know for a fact there were extremists there, as some have been arrested, but mostly ignored by the media. Reports came from social media a busload of Antifa extremists had arrived to infiltrate the rally. But there isn't a Trump derangement syndrome sufferer that would believe that, and we can't trust the media to investigate it. Nevertheless, every government official and talking head, including Fox, were filled with outrage. Like everything else for the past 4 years, the gaslighted narrative was that this was Trump's fault, too. Rather than having the slightest interest in election integrity, with mail-in balloting, or the concerns of 74 million fellow Americans, they continued to pile on the president. Trump tweeted a video asking protesters for peace and to please go home. Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram collectively blocked the president simultaneously, supposedly until the transfer of the presidency has taken place. Aside from that being a blatant violation of Trump's First Amendment rights, wouldn't that also be collusion on the part of the giants? Michelle Obama sneered he should be banned permanently from all social media. After a summer of constant rioting, why now were they all so furious about this one event? That night, Biden was confirmed president as many shaken senators withdrew support for voting to suppress election results in Arizona. Mitch McConnell, with his own conflict of interest with China, kind of like our new president, made a speech about the integrity of the process. The next day, McConnell's Chinese-American wife, daughter of a wealthy Chinese shipping magnate, resigned from the cabinet. Then outrage intensified. The media erupted, as did most congressmen, full of outrage at Trump and his supporters. Lindsey Graham shot his mouth off everywhere. Before all the facts were known, Republican congressmen felt it safe to disembark from the Trump train, relieved the ride was finally over. People within the administration jumped like rats off a sinking ship. Kankakee's own Adam Kinzinger tweeted Trump should be removed from office by enacting the 25th Amendment. Calling it a wake-up call, the House's biggest rhino actually did so before House dingbat Nancy Pelosi got around to it. Perhaps it's Mr. Kinzinger who will get the wake-up call in his next election bid. The Kankakee Daily Journal reached out to our local Illinois Representative Robin Kelly. Well, I think she's still our rep, unless Madigan has gerrymandered the district again. She blamed the president, too, saying the time has come to look deep within our collective psyche to determine how a man willing to destroy our nation was enabled for so long. I wasn't sure if she was referring to Trump or Obama. Whichever, perhaps it's a Miss Kelly that needs to do some psyche delivering for being a Madigan lackey. When the Journal interviewed Senator Tammy Duckworth, she said, "It never occurred to me a domestic threat would occur on the steps of the U.S. Capitol after being incited by the president. It never occurred to Trump supporters either, Miss Duckworth. Before Kinzinger, Kelly, or Duckworth cast further stones, they should be reminded that Illinois, the state they have been misrepresenting, leads the nation in just about every statistic that is embarrassing. With the entire weight of the swamp on Trump's back for 4 years, he accomplished more in any month than the three of them did in their collective political careers. And now from Russ Mann, a different view, Barbarians at the Gate. What is enough? What does it take to offend those 74 million people who identify themselves as Americans, but condone conspiracies against their government contrived by their own elected leaders? On January 6, 2021, the nation watched, horrified, as invaders overran the hallowed halls of our capital on a search and destroy mission. Some were carrying tear gas, pepper spray, explosive devices, of course guns, and 11 Molotov cocktails. Windows in the U.S. Capitol were broken, House and Senate chambers were violated, furniture trashed, and private offices of congressional members were ransacked and looted for souvenirs. Congressional members of both political stripes, including the vice president, were forced to take shelter in bunkers. The attack resulted in 5 deaths, including a Capitol Police officer. Ironically, the officer beaten to death with a fire extinguisher by a Trump supporter was also reported by his father to be a Trump enthusiast. So far, the U.S. attorney in D.C. has filed charges against 55 rioters, with more to come. And it could have been more ominous. Videos and information are coming to light that the fascist terrorists were planning on taking congressional hostages. One insurrectionist was pictured carrying plastic handcuffs, while others were chanting, "Hang Mike Pence," who they believed had turned against Trump by doing his constitutional duty as president of the Senate. The insurrectionists were acting on a lie that has been propagated by Trump for 4 years and ramped up in recent days, that the only way he could lose was by his opponents cheating. Donald Trump once falsely accused Muslims of dancing on rooftops on 9/11 as the World Trade Center towers collapsed. Yet videos leaked out of Donald Trump, family members, and staff gleefully watching television scenes of the assault on the Capitol and dancing. Then, when urged to address the issue to the nation, he repeated his lie that he had won the election by a landslide. And he told his supporters, the insurgent hordes, "Go home in peace, we love you." It's not like we didn't already know who the rioters were or why they were there. Donald Trump had been setting up, in his words, a wild day of demonstrations as Congress met to accept the Electoral College result in the 2020 election. The Capitol intruders carried flags that identified them as white supremacists. Supremacist is, however, a misnomer. They are racists who time and again demonstrate their ignorance and inferiority. More importantly, they carried a banner that bore the name of their leader, flags emblazoned with the name of the man who incited this breach of our national security, Trump. But Trump had henchmen. A dozen GOP senators, led by conspirators Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley, and 121 GOP House members led the charge from the inside as they attempted to change the outcome of the 2020 election that has been ratified by all 50 states. The integrity of the election had been guaranteed by every bipartisan state election board, as well as every national security agency, including the FBI, and Trump's own Attorney General William Barr, who recently resigned. The Trump administration is ending in disgrace for disrespecting all things that America once stood for. The insurrection by pro-Trump rioters resulted in 5 dead, more than 60 arrested, 14 police officers injured, and left a nation in distress and shame. The United States once saved the world from fascism and garnered the respect of every nation on the planet. Today we can't even defend ourselves from the fascism that has corroded and corrupted our national government and our society. Democratic allies around the world denounced the mob assault on our capital. On June 2, 2020, protests were held by Black Lives Matter in Washington, D.C. over the death of George Floyd. National Guard troops and police units were deployed, ringing the National Memorial. They were equipped with assault rifles, shields, tear gas, and battle helmets, full riot gear. But it was unnecessary. It was peaceful. Yet it contrasted the lack of security that allowed the U.S. Capitol to be violated last week. During the Wednesday, January 6 events, even as red flags had gone up weeks in advance, that President Trump was calling for a wild day, for the electoral vote acceptance by Congress, the Capitol Police were ill-prepared and overrun by rioters long before the D.C. National Guard was activated. It has also come to light that even as Maryland's Republican governor, Larry Hogan, had his National Guards poised to cross into D.C. to restore order, new Trump appointee Acting Secretary of Defense Christopher Miller had withheld issuing permission until the Capitol had been breached and the damage was done. After 4 years of Republicans enabling the actions of the most out-of-control president in American history, With only days to go, dozens of those enablers, Trump's chief of staff, his transportation secretary, wife of Mitch McConnell, education secretary, even Trump's hand-picked attorney general are all bailing out in hopes of wiping the slate clean of the past 4 years and salvaging their political careers and historical legacy by criticizing Trump's latest failure to act like a leader. White House sources report that more high-profile resignations are coming. So why did it take 3 years, 11 months, and 2 weeks for them to realize that everything and everybody that Trump touches turns to guano, when the rest of us could see it coming? Even as many, including the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal, urged Donald Trump to resign his post to Vice President Pence, others, including Senators Mike Lee and Lindsey Graham, feel he should stay to provide strong leadership to the nation. Really? With just a week to go, isn't it a little late to act like a strong leader now? Given the weak response by those charged with protecting our Capitol, there are worries about the security of the upcoming inauguration. The colloquialism, "it ain't over till the fat lady sings," applies here. Even as the Trump era ends on January 20, remnants of his emboldened stormtroopers will remain. Ergo, the inauguration of the 46th president needs to be defended with whatever level force as is deemed necessary. We'll turn now to the death notices for the week. Robert Ahrens of Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin. Robert Allen Ahrens, Pierre, passed away at his home in Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin, January 1st, at the age of 81. The family will hold a private celebration of his life at a later date. Jean Leanna Holt, 92, of Gilman, passed away on Friday, December 25th, at her daughter's home in Wesley Chapel, Florida. Graveside services will be held at a later date at Gilman Cemetery. Memorials may be made to Zion United Church of Christ in Gilman or Gilman Nursing Home Auxiliary. Local arrangements by Knapp Redenius Funeral Home in Gilman. To send flowers or a memorial gift to the family of Jean Leanna Holt, please visit our sympathy store. Gary L. Price, 65, of Onarga, passed away on Monday, December 28th, at his home. Cremation rites were accorded by Knapp Funeral Home in Onarga. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. To send flowers or a memorial gift to the family of Gary L. Price, please visit our sympathy store. Pamela K. Fink, 70, of Onarga, passed away on Sunday, January 10th, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana of a sudden illness. Private visitation and funeral mass will be held at St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Crescent City. Burial will follow at Onarga Cemetery in Onarga. A public celebration of life will be held at a later date. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Crescent City as per family wishes. Arrangements were made by Knapp Funeral Home in Onarga. Please share a memory of Pam at knappfuneralhomes.com. This concludes the reading of the death notices for the week, and now we'll return and finish with local news and information. County to ask for tax hike, and Gilman gives okay to Boondocks Restaurant. The Iroquois County Board will ask voters to approve a halfpenny increase in the county sales tax in March, which could generate almost $1 million per year to be used to address public safety concerns and put more sheriff's deputies on the road. The fund will not be used to build a new jail, which had been discussed in recent months, but will be used to make improvements to the current facility. The move for the increase does face some opposition in Watseka, where the community has a unique arrangement with three corporations to funnel all their sales tax collections for the state through Watseka. The Gilman City Council held a short but productive special meeting Saturday afternoon when they voted to approve the sale of a city-owned lot at the corner of East 3rd and North Central to accommodate the construction of a restaurant which has been named Boondocks. Work continues on Parker School. Work is continuing on the Parker School, the former one-room schoolhouse that was moved from its former original location west of Gilman on US 24 in August across the highway from Doc's Drugs, now CVS, where it will serve as an example of what education in the country used to be like. And the Dean's List. Local students on the Dean's List at Western Illinois for the fall term include Lori Tammen, Luke McIntyre, and Grant Meyer. Boys and girls play at Tolono Unity. Both the Iroquois West boys and girls came out on the short end of the score Tuesday night in a rare doubleheader featuring both teams. The boys lost 62-37 and the girls 59-28. Victoria Crones led the girls with 8 points and 7 rebounds, while Lauren Vaughn and Ariel Schroeder each had 4 boards. The Tolono boys dominated the boards in that contest. Kyle Shoddy led the West scoring with 11, while Kyle White had 7 and Ryan Alvarez 6. The Raider boys would go on to finish 7th in the Kankakee Holiday Tourney, defeating Piatone 58-45 in the last game, with Zach Tim getting 20 to go with 10 rebounds, while Scott Dietz had 15 points and 10 boards. Notice to Iroquois County taxpayers. Chief County Assessment Officer Robert Yergler and Iroquois County Treasurer Kurt Albers are announcing that any taxpayers needing an address, name change, or wanting to apply for an exemption, for example, senior exemption, senior freeze, disability exemption, or veterans disability exemption, should contact the Assessment Office at 815-432-6978 for exemption forms or to make an appointment. The Administrative Center is still closed to the public due to COVID-19, and you must make an appointment prior to entering the building. Changes should be made by March 12, 2021, to ensure the information will be correct on the upcoming tax bills. IWMS December Student of the Month. Check the hard copy of the Gilman Star to see the photos of these young people. Students pictured were recently nominated for December Student of the Month at Iroquois West Middle School. Teachers nominated students based on poise and confidence from John Wooden's Pyramid of Success. From the 6th grade, Kaya Kimmel, Madeline Clark, Axel Andrade, and winner Drew Talbert. 7th grade, Gretchen Wilms, Leah Honeycutt, winner Elizabeth Izquierdo, Aubrey Chandler, and Selma DeVu. And 8th grade, Mario Andrade, winner Quan Haas, and Kaylee Look. Absent was Yao Canizella. From the Iroquois County Blotter Report, January 1st, Sheldon police arrested Lane S. Welsh, 37, of Sheldon, who was charged with domestic battery and child endangerment. January 6th, Iroquois County Sheriff's Police arrested Kyle E. Warner, 29, of Crescent City, who was charged with driving while license suspended. He was also wanted on 2 active county warrants for contempt of court and failure to appear on a driving while license suspended charge. Sheriff's Police arrested Heather N. Sutherland, 41, of Westville, who was wanted on an active county warrant for failure to appear on driving while license revoked charge. January 7th, Milford police arrested Denise D. Stevens, 41, of Hoopston, who was charged with possession of methamphetamine under 5 grams. Milford police arrested Heather N. Scott, 20, of Milford, who was wanted on an outstanding county warrant for failure to appear on possession of methamphetamine under 5 grams charge. This has been Tamara reading the Gilman Star. I hope to read with you again soon. Have a good day.